Thank you, Barbara.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Alan Marion Davis, and I'm wearing sort of three hats really this morning, I think, probably. Partly as chair of the Royal Society for Public Health, but also the president of the UK Faculty of Public Health, which is a professional standards body. And also, I think, until recently, the director of public health in the London Borough of Southwark, which is an inner city, deprived inner city district in South London, where there's a high minority population, many of them first generation migrants, particularly a high population of black Africans from West Africa, Nigeria in particular, but also a high proportion of Caribbean migrants as well. So those are probably the hats I'm wearing this morning. But my job is to just provide an initial overview of the picture and expand a little on what Barbara was saying there. Just a few relatively familiar images of migrant populations. And migration, of course, is not only between countries, but to some extent could be within countries as well, often as a result of natural disasters, such as in this one, or economic situations, as in the boat people. And the phenomenon of boat people continues to this day, or drought, as in Darfur, causing shifting of populations within the country or into neighboring countries to seek some sort of sustenance. But who are the migrants? Here we have a slide which gives an outline of the key, I'm going to use this keyboard, it's a bit easier, subgroups. There you can see that we have migrant workers and their families, and usually these immigrants tend to be documented. They've been through the right procedures and they're properly documented. Refugees and asylum seekers, again going through the processes, the legal processes on the whole. There's a large group of irregular migrants, those who aren't documented, haven't gone through the right procedures. Often these people have been smuggled in. There are victims of human trafficking. By the way, these groups aren't mutually exclusive. Often there are blurrings. There are victims of human trafficking who may or may not be legal immigrants, as it were, and people returning back to their home country, and there are issues around that. And within countries, you get internally displaced people as well. So those are just broad categories, just to give an idea of the sorts of groups of people we're talking about. There are pull factors, so-called, people seeking a better life, a better job, more opportunities for themselves and their families, higher wages, better education, religious freedom, political freedom, personal safety. These are the familiar factors which encourage people to leave their homeland and to move somewhere else where they feel their prospects are likely to be better. A high proportion of migrants fall into this category and are pulled by these sorts of factors. The push factors are the obverse of that, where you've got food insecurity, low wages, you've got the various forms of persecution, victimization, might be natural disasters, perhaps as a result of climate change, there might be armed conflict, or it might be that people are enticed into moving by unscrupulous agents who want to make money out of smuggling them and painting a false rosy picture of the country they're being transferred to. So looking at the trends in migration that Barbara's already mentioned in brief, there are currently, and it's hard to arrive at firm figures because the definitions are so varied from country to country, but there's an estimated 192 million migrants worldwide. And that's 3% of the global population. So one person in 35 is in the world is a migrant. It is rising steadily, and as Barbara said, particularly the proportion of females. It's now about half and half, male-female. 120 million of the 192 are migrant workers and their families, so it is the great majority. Nearly two-thirds of them fall into that category. And the great majority of the migrant workers, though, in contrast to the tend to be men, but this is where the biggest growth is in terms of women and children. And Europe, because I want to focus a little bit on Europe, has about one-third of the total migrants that there are in the world are living in Europe. So there's a graph looking at the rise, this pretty steady rise in terms of international migrants. And this this is a useful map because it looks to see where the gains and losses are, as it were. And the reddish colours are those countries which are where people are leaving those countries, and then the bluish countries are those where people are moving into. So you can see where things are happening there. Countries which are grey, no data. Greenland, no data on that. Brazil, it's more or less a net gain and loss. But you can see countries there which are where you can see where people are moving from and where people are moving to in that map. The countries with the largest number of international migrants, well, USA is way ahead of everybody else. It's a huge difference between them and the next biggest country, which is Russia. And then you can see there a sort of list of the hierarchy as it moves down. But the difference in terms of the USA and the rest is phenomenal. Just a little focus on Europe, because we're going to talk about that a bit later on. But the same sorts of trends are seen in Europe. So there we are. There's a sort of this inexorable rise, a big leap in the late 80s in terms of migrants entering Europe. And in terms of total numbers, Germany is way ahead of France, and France is ahead of the UK, and then you can see how it goes down the list there. This is just looking at Western and Central Europe. There's a similar sort of graph for a chart for Eastern Europe, which would have Russia up the top there. But that's looking at Europe in the WHO sense of the word. In terms of the proportions of the population who are migrants, there's a different hierarchy. Quite interesting, really. And there we are, Luxembourg and Liechtenstein and Switzerland and Latvia and Estonia. You see, that's where a very high proportion of the population, over one person in three, is a migrant in those two small European countries at the top there. So what are the potential health problems? This is what we're talking about here. I mean, traditionally, the concern in public health terms, looking back over the past, has been around health protection, looking at communicable disease and a lot of border control of migrants, health screens, etc., to try to prevent infectious diseases from coming into the country. But more recently, attention has quite rightly transferred to the health of the migrants themselves and the health of how they interact in society and how well they're integrated, and looking at the health inequalities that are created by being a migrant in a strange country. So along those lines, there are massive mental health problems that need to be dealt with, and you can see the other things listed there in terms of dental health. A lot of migrants come in with chronic diseases which have been poorly treated and poorly managed. There are often many maternal and child health problems. In some cases, malnutrition can lead to maternal obstetric complications. The children are often not well and require immunization and other basic child health care. In many cases, particularly among women, there are issues around exploitation, violence and abuse, and so on and so forth. So those are some of the, that's not an exclusive list, of course, but those are some of the main main health, individual health problems, and consequently public health problems that come with migration. Mental health, just to focus on that for a moment, isolation and loneliness, and you can see the things listed there, the marginalisation, the racism, the cultural differences and barriers. I mentioned the abuse. And the mental health burden of being a migrant can be considerable. Just to focus for a moment on irregular migration, that's basically illegal or non-documented migration. These people lack legal status because they don't have the necessary paperwork, or they've had a visa but it's expired, and they are basically without legal rights, or at least on the face of it they are. And this is a problem because they often fear being repatriated, being exposed and discovered. They're often exploited, and they're at really at the margins of society, and there are huge health inequalities in terms of the illegal migrant population, and it's really one of the biggest public health issues that many places face, particularly in the inner cities. The work that illegal or irregular migrants find themselves doing are often the 3 Ds: difficult jobs, dirty jobs, dangerous jobs, often very unpleasant working conditions, very exploitative of bosses. Many of them are victims of trafficking, especially women. A lot of them find themselves in the sex trade. Some of them are literally living in slavery, almost imprisoned by their boss. And it's a pretty worrying picture in terms of health inequalities. They often, because of their status or their lack of status, are afraid to seek help. They are not well catered for by the services, or they're reluctant to approach the services. Over-reliance on A&E. There are often barriers, lack of information. And what's required is specially tailored services, lots of protection and support, help with the interpretation, advocacy, medical and psychological care, advice on their rights and on benefits, etc. And often the response of the services to these people is totally inadequate. WHO has public health goals for migrants, and you can predict what they would be, but there they are. To try to avoid the disparities, try to improve the access to services, to maintain migrants' health rights, and put in place appropriate and effective interventions, and make sure that we minimize the negative outcomes that there are. So the health systems have to respond. And health protection has been the traditional one, as I mentioned, but more recently, looking at health services, trying to find ways in which to make health services more appropriate and more accessible, looking at the issues of equity and try to be more inclusive, making sure that services could respond in the event of humanitarian crises, which can occur in a very unpredictable way, so it's hard for services to plan for that. One of the big problems about migrant health is the lack of information, the lack of accurate data for monitoring and for looking at needs and outcomes. So that's something that needs to be addressed. And we do need more research on all sorts of aspects of health aspects of migration. There's a lack of evidence and information, broadly speaking, in this field. Just recently, a publication from the Global Migration Group, which is a sort of collection of UN agencies, which has, on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of the Declaration of Human Rights. And it's basically saying that, I mean, that quote there from the UN Secretary General is saying that we need to look beyond using migrants purely in terms of developing the country's economies and seeing people as human beings with the rights that should be upheld and maintained, and that every country has a responsibility to respond to the needs and rights of individuals. Article 2 of the Declaration 60 years ago puts that out in very clear wording, and that states have a responsibility for the protection of migrants' human rights, and that the states where they come from, where they're passing through, and where they arrive at, all those states bear part of the responsibility. There are a raft of treaties since the Declaration 60 years ago which add detail to this, and I'll just quickly throw those up, but you can see that there's been massive amount of work and in terms of international conventions and protocols and treaties to support this. And the WHO international health regulations cover this area as well, as we may hear later. And just very recently, the resolution on migrant health, equitable access to health services without discrimination, inclusion of migrants' health in regional health strategies between countries and within countries, making sure that we have proper assessments and studies and share best practice, and strengthen the capacity of service providers and health professionals to respond. To engage in multilateral cooperation and establish technical networks for research. And I think, this is a major opportunity for public health associations such as the World Federation and the European Public Health Association and others. There's a very direct call for networking of good practice. The UK Faculty of Public Health has produced a briefing statement on the health needs of asylum seekers. It's largely from a UK context, but there's some general messages there, and I have got a few copies of that. People are interested at the end. But just to finish up by saying that there is an opportunity, a huge opportunity, particularly on the back of that recent WHO report, for the public health associations to work together to try to make sure we can maximise the effectiveness of health systems and public health organisations and individuals to work together to try to provide the best we can for migrants and to improve their and reduce their health inequalities and improve their health outcomes. And that's my email address at the bottom there in case people want to get in touch. Thank you very much, Barbara. Thank you.